some reason I can't tell. The mic's on, but I'm sure it is. Let's begin just briefly, set the context of where we are historically, where we are into the narrative of Israel. Who's king?
Saul
is king. And what has happened with Saul? The Lord has left him. He's been rejected as king. He still is king, but he is told that his time is numbered. His days are numbered, basically. And who has been anointed king? David. Why has David been selected? Man after God's own heart. Right, and we talked about that. Did you say something else, Jeff? So, Saul is from the tribe of Benjamin. David is from the tribe of Judah, right? So, not even in the same tribe, but we are seeing David anointed king. Tell me a little bit about David. Who is he? He's a shepherd, right? He's a shepherd. He's a son of Jesse. Youngest son. Thank you. Very good. Good point, right? His family, his brothers are, and he himself is, shepherds and warriors, men of war, right? And we'll see that in chapter 17. What else about David do we, or will we know or talk about here? He's a musician and a poet, right? He's not just playing the music, he's writing the music, right? He's writing the psalms. He writes many, many psalms. What else do we know at the time of his being anointed king? What else do we know about David? Okay, beautiful eyes and handsome, but not the imposing figure that Saul was necessarily, but certainly still not somebody who, as king, there are people going to walk up and say, "Whoa, who is that?" Right? But what else happens at his being anointed? Just as what went away from Saul, what? Spirit of the Lord comes upon David, right? So I think that's an important point as we move into talking about David, the writer of many psalms, that he was, and from the time that we see him being anointed by God or by Samuel to be the king, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. He is in that state, I guess, if you want to say it, that condition from moving forward, as he writes many psalms, as he is playing for Saul to soothe Saul's troubled spirit, as he goes before Saul to say, "I'll go and fight Goliath," and as it continues, this is a man who has the Spirit of God on him.
Yeah, later on we find out that his other brothers are in the army, and David's not. I think we can safely assume he's probably a teenager.
Right.
Yeah,
certainly the impression right now, just based on his size and the fact that he's the youngest and all of those things, that he is not, when we're introduced to him, an old man. He's still probably in his teens, at most, you know, 20, 21, I mean, but most likely he's in his teens. And we'll talk about it, why he would be home, he still has responsibilities to help his father and other things while the older brothers are in war.
The men that went to war, were they between 20 and 70, or am I mistaken? Or
50, 20, 50? That's the Levites, right? But now that you say that, Joe, I need to look that up, because there was something about, and I don't remember. But yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and that would help confirm it. But we certainly recognize, partly given the length of his reign and other things, that this was not somebody who was already in his 30s or 40s or anything like that when we're introduced to him. He is still most likely in his as a teenager. All right, so David has been anointed king, but he does not immediately take the throne, obviously. Saul is still reigning. And at the end of the chapter 16, I believe, there was already been discussion. We won't go back through it, but that there appears to be some opportunity that David has already interacted with Saul, that he is able to soothe Saul's troubled spirit by playing music for him. But it certainly appears also that he goes back home, certainly his home, when he is, when we see the opening of the scenes of chapter 17 with David and Goliath and the events around that. But we were going to spend more time, and the plan as Ethan goes through the study with you with David is to talk about the historical record and his being king and the events that are surrounded, but also to bring in a number of the Psalms of David. And this morning we were going to look at Psalm 23. Just briefly, as we've said, David was a prolific writer. Many of the Psalms contained in the Book of Psalm are his writings. And throughout his life, we certainly know and recognize some that had to come later in his life, and some that we don't know a time frame. We don't know the events surrounding why he would have written it. And he doesn't. And some of the ones he wrote, he didn't have to experience the thing that he's describing necessarily, because he obviously had the Spirit of the Lord on him. He was inspired to write these, but it certainly seems that it was in his nature to be sort of a man of all things. He was a shepherd, and he was a warrior, and he was a poet, a musician. All these things were in his skill set. And so therefore, some of the Psalms we're going to be able to look at and say it's very clearly around this event and how he responds to it. Others are going to be more just, these were very appropriate in many types of the situations that David would have been in. And that's one reason that the Psalms are so powerful and helpful for us, right? Because so many of the things of just the human mindset and the conditions of man, from the highs to the lows, all those things can be found within the Psalms, and should be an encouragement to us, a time to be able to help us contemplate when we're troubled, to be able to contemplate when we're rejoicing, when we can praise God. All those things come with it. We don't know, and this morning, we don't know when David wrote Psalm 23, probably one of his most, in the world today even, most known psalms, Psalm of David. But one that certainly is appropriate from the timing of thinking about what David is doing at the time that he is anointed king, and the importance of what the sort of the theme and how it's presented is in the psalm without discussing it all at first. Let's begin with a reading of Psalm 23. Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So the psalm has a primary theme, and what is that theme?
Shepherd.
The Lord is our shepherd. David's shepherd, right? Who is David in it? Yeah, he's a sheep, right? He's one of the flock. He's one being led by the shepherd. Is this a new concept of God being the shepherd, his people being the sheep?
No,
it's not. Where do we see it maybe first?
In
Ah, very good, Joe. Genesis chapter 48. At least as far as I'm aware, this was the first time we see it. Genesis chapter 48. Jacob has come to Egypt. He's blessing his sons. He's specifically in chapter 48, he's going to bless Joseph's sons. And now in picking up in verse 15 of Genesis 48, Jacob says, and he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named among them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. See, this is why you should always make sure you check your translations. Another translation says, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, whereas the New King James says, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day. But that certainly makes sense as far as being fed. And as I said, other translations will say, the God who has been my shepherd all my life. No, absolutely. And that's where I was going to go. I mean, the idea is known. We'll see it in we can see it in other psalms. But ultimately, who do we see referred to as our shepherd? Jesus, right? John chapter 10. John chapter 10, beginning of verse 7, Jesus says to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep, but a hireling who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. And we can continue. And as the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And one thing I forgot to mention with David in the Psalms, besides the fact that he was very prolific, and he wrote many Psalms, and it sort of covers the gamut of the human condition, emotionally, physically, all those types of things. One of the other things that we see, not just with David's Psalms, but many of David's Psalms, is what I'll call direct and indirect prophetic tone. Not just tone, but word. Many prophecies, many things that look to Jesus and look to God's kingdom are contained within the Psalms. And then, as I would say, indirectly, like Psalm 23 is not necessarily a prophecy of Christ being our shepherd, but it speaks to everything that Christ is about our shepherd, right? And so we can certainly see that here. I think, and it should not be lost, and as Marty was saying, you know, some of it is a shadow of the things to come, right? The idea and the concept of Jacob talking about that the Lord was his shepherd. And we see other places where that's mentioned. But the idea that, and the concept and the understanding of God being the shepherd to his people, certainly brought strongly in Psalm 23 because of just the fact that Jesus is our great shepherd. He declares himself to be. And so therefore that idea is strongly brought forth. Any other comments regarding that? So we begin with the idea then that David recognizes God as his shepherd. And the next phrase, I shall not want. What does he mean by I shall not want?
I will not be in need.
I will not be in need, right? I mean, quite literally, as a shepherd is to take care of their sheep, should the sheep be in need?
No.
They should be being fed and protected and led and all those things. So quite literally, from a physical standpoint, we should be able to trust in God. He is going to care for us. Those types of things.
And when you think about it, the scripture, 2 Timothy 3:16-17, talks about, all scripture is inspired and is for profitable for reproof, correction, righteousness. And so we have the Bible inspired today for us to read and study and to apply in our lives. And when we do, then everything we need is needed.
Right. Yeah, everything is given to us, both from a physical standpoint, we can be taken care of. Doesn't mean there won't be hard times. David certainly saw that, but yet he could declare, I shall not want, right? And this is a man who will sometimes be hiding in a cave from Saul and, other things. But yet he can say that, and we can certainly declare it. And it isn't just a focus on the physical. It's more, I believe, we should recognize the focus on the fact that God is taking care of his people and that he has provided all. This idea of not being in want is not something that David only touches on here. He has other psalms as well. Just one example, Psalm 34. Not reading all of it, but Psalm 34, the additional information is the Psalm of David when he pretended madness before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. So David's on the run right at this time of this psalm, running away from Saul, and he's gone to the Philistines. They're enemies of Israel, and he's gone to the Philistines for protection. And now the Philistines are questioning, David's killed a lot of us, of our people, and maybe this isn't the best thing. So he feigns madness, but all of this means that David feels a little alone, a little isolated, right? No real protection other than his cohorts. But yet he writes this psalm, and in Psalm 34, beginning in verse 8, O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints. There is no want to those who fear him. The young lions lack and suffer hunger, but those who seek the Lord shall not lack any good thing. So again, just another example of David declaring that there's nothing to be concerned about.
Sense to you from a worldly perspective, that making that commitment to trust him like David really showed that, plus the knowledge of how you know him, not just the knowledge alone.
Right. Yeah, because then it's just a functionary thing of I know stuff, but there has to be the faith and the trust in what you're taking in to know, yes, that's what God's going to do.
And that trust requires humility, because we have to decide our way is not good.
Right.
But we have to submit to his
right.
way.
And
the way to submit is with that humility in order to do that.
Yeah.
Kind of like James 4:7-8 there.
Yeah. And we'll talk about all this a little bit more, because, again, remind ourselves, this is a picture of a shepherd and his sheep, right? And the things that a shepherd will have to do with his sheep, they trust that, once they become part of the flock, they trust that shepherd to get them to the food and to the water and to protect them and things to a certain degree. But that doesn't mean that there aren't sheep who wander and that don't need some correction from time to time and some chastening. But But and that, again, is the job of the shepherd to do those things as well. But absolutely, there has to be some submission on the part of us. Certainly, the trust that we have in God, and we see because of that, as we move into more of the imagery of the shepherd with his sheep, what is God doing for us in verse 2? Why is it presented as not just that he takes us to good pastures and he gets us water, but yet he what imagery is further enhanced and emphasized the way that David presents it? No, verse 2. He makes me to lie down in green waters, in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. Green waters might be a little touch and go. Yeah. But what besides just the fact that the shepherd is making sure that I've got food and water, what is further being emphasized here? Really good care, right? Comfort and peace is being implied, right? Because you can lie down here. There's safety here. In the still waters, right? There's peace that's being presented here.
When it says he makes me lie down, that implies he's, you know, forcing us or telling us, almost like a parent.
Yeah.
You know, trying to correct a child or guide a child.
No, I don't think it's I force you to lie down. Is I'm providing for, I make it so that you do so. He doesn't say, lie down. I don't think that's the idea at all. There's a flourishing here that is taking place.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because certainly the alternative could be, well, they're going to have to lie down at some point. Sheep have to sleep, those types of things. But yet we're giving
what's made for me is
yeah,
the green.
What's made, yeah, exactly.
So you think that's be better?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of directing that happens there, right? But I don't see shepherds most of the time walking around their flock and
right.
pushing them down. You got to lay down right here, yeah. You know. Yes, ma'am.
I see it as an aspect of rest or restfulness.
Right.
It's implemented rather than, okay, you're on my team, I'm going to feed you.
Go.
Right.
Yeah. Rest, that's part of it.
Yeah, I think maybe Dale is saying, what you're saying is right. It's more that it's made available, and therefore I've made a very peaceful and safe and lush place, so that you have your food and you have certain. And you think about green pastures. Would you rather lay on green pastures or the beaten area where there's not a lot of undergrowth and things? I mean, even animals, I think, still like some comfort when they can get it. Right? Yep. Joey, you were going to say something.
Nurturing a place
right.
where they can come and trust, you know, that they're going to be taken care of and fed in the right and proper way.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, Terry. Absolutely. I wanted to bring out one other reference toward God and being the shepherd and what he does for his people as we think here. Ezekiel used the imagery of the shepherd, right? The irresponsible shepherds were the priests and the leaders of the people, because they certainly were not guiding him as they should. But Ezekiel chapter 34, Ezekiel 34, verse 11, says, "For thus says the Lord God, indeed I myself will search for my sheep and seek them out. As a shepherd seeks out his flock on the day he is among his scattered sheep, so will I seek out my sheep and deliver them from all the places where they were scattered on a cloudy and dark day. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and will bring them to their own land. I will feed them on the mountains of Israel, in the valleys and in the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them in good pasture, and their fold shall be on the high mountains of Israel. There they shall lie down in a good fold and feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I will feed my flock and I will make them lie down, says the Lord God. I will seek what was lost and bring back what was driven away, bind up the broken and strengthen what was sick, but I will destroy the fat and the strong and feed them in judgment. So, very similar imagery, right? God, but though here what we see is God is going to bring his people back. There is going to be that remnant that would return, but that God was going to be their shepherd because these people were his flock. And that, but yet we see the same idea of preparing and finding these good pastures, feeding the flock, and again, even the imagery, I will make them lie down, because he's brought them to a place where they can be safe, and where they can be fed, and where they can be nurtured by God, where the injured can be healed, and those types of things. So we see that God uses this imagery again, and what is being brought about, mentioned here by David. And we'd mentioned it earlier, but Marty said it, there's a trust, but the other piece of it is that it is because, well, how are we aware of this? How are God's people aware of this now? Well, it's through his word, right? That's how we're going to know what he has provided for us, and that's how we're going to know that he will feed us and that he has blessed us and that he has made a place for us to be able to lie down. And all those things come through his word, because that is how we're going to be restored. But our trust in him comes because it's built by what God has revealed to us.
There's a picture in the New Testament which shows Jesus doing this very thing when he feeds the 5,000. Mark points out the little circumstance that he had them sit down on the green grass.
That's right.
Pop a green in there. Grass is green. And they're by the Sea of Galilee. Yeah. And then he feeds them physically, but he feeds them also spiritually.
Right. Very good. Yeah, thank you. All right. Verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So we see in verse 4 sort of the final imagery with the shepherd and his sheep. What imagery, though, is brought forward here? Certainly not the peace that we just talked about, right? Or is it?
Protection in troublesome times.
Right. Protection in troublesome times. When a shepherd leads his flock, did he just go from green pasture to green pasture to green pasture to green pasture, and there was never any rocky way, there was never any concern? You had to find those places, right? You had to find those places. And sometimes you got to take your flock through an area that could be dangerous. The area that David lived is where? Bethlehem. And the terrain around Bethlehem and all, there's mountains, right? There's mountains and then there's plateaus and other things. But with mountains comes what? Rocky areas and the low areas? Valleys, thank you. So this was not imagery that was just foreign. It's not like David lived out in the plain and said, you led me through the valley, the plain of darkness, right? I mean, there's certainly dark plains. But this is imagery that would have been very real to him. Times where, I don't know if y'all have ever had opportunities to go hiking in places where you get into a little ravine and it's steep and you think, wow, there's not a lot of options here, you know? And can be a little intimidating, right?
That's right, and often people would travel just in the valleys, couldn't get
right. Right, yeah.
You look at a map of Pennsylvania, a road map of all the, many of the roads west of here go from southwest to northeast because that's the way the mountains run.
Right, yeah. Absolutely, yep. So, but David is painting a picture here of around him is trouble. Around him is death. Around him are the things that can be evil. But what is his attitude? He won't fear. He has no fear here because you are with me. God is with me, is what he says. Therefore, he doesn't have to have that fear. He is being led already. If we go back to the previous, he leads me in the paths of righteousness. Leading in the paths of righteousness and in the valley of the shadow of death seem counter, but they're not, because we live in the world. And the shepherd has to get from one flock to the next flock, and we have things. But yet our path is protected by God if we are serving God as we should, if we are allowing him to be our shepherd, right? And God, maybe even in your opening in the Bible, Psalm 27, the first verse, "The Lord is my light and my salvation." So I'm in the valley of the shadow of death. You get this picture of darkness. You get this picture of foreboding, but yet your light is God. Your salvation is God. In the final imagery with the shepherd of verse 4 is what?
Your rod and your staff.
Yeah, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. What is the function? So two things are mentioned, right? Which is not, sometimes I think we think that the shepherd has one stick, right? So how does a rod and a staff? But in reality, there are two functions with this. So what is the rod and the staff for the shepherd?
I think if the basically one is for correcting and guiding the sheep. One is for protection of the evil.
Yeah.
So it's defense.
Yep.
Just another point. I think it's interesting that, as you're pointing out, David isn't saying, you make it so there is no evil
right.
in my path. You make it so I fear no evil.
Right.
And I think that's very comforting for us today, that even though there's evil in the world, it reminds me, like, as a kid, when Dad was away on a trip or something, you know, every little, like, noise in the night feels very different.
Sure.
And then suddenly when Dad is home, those same noises are there, but I have no fear of them because right. Dad is around, and I think we can have that same
yep.
sort of comfort.
Yep. I think that's a good. Yep. And because we'll see even in verse 5, right? He's prepared a table in the presence of my enemies. They're not gone. Their enemies are around, evil's around, but yet we don't have to have that fear. We don't have to be afraid of the evil around us, because God is our protection. And as Jacob was saying, the rod and the staff, it's really the twofold piece. There is the correcting and herding and shepherding, kind of keeping the sheep together, pulling them out of bramble, maybe pulling, you know, those types of things. But then there is the support that the shepherd would have, be able to use the staff, even just in the walking, but also that is a stick that can be used to ward off the wild animal, the other things that would be needed, the thief even, that would come to try to take from his flock. So we shift a little bit now, still with the idea that God is his shepherd, but yet now we see a little different kind of a setting, more of the mentality or the things that are going on in David's mind. Begins with, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over." So describe, if you would, how does David view his relationship with God? What is he seeing as he, in verse 6 it continues, what is he seeing as what he's receiving from God?
Has
everything he needs, right? It's that my cup runs over, right? That's what that means, I think. Yet even in the presence of my enemies, you know, I'm still being blessed, right? I mean, because part of that you could take from the standpoint of, well, if you're having to entertain your enemies, then you're maybe not in the strongest position, right? But yet this is not the case. He has been anointed king. I think that likens to, draws to that too, but certainly God has anointed him, and now he has everything he needs. Verse 6, "Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life." The confidence that David expresses here, he fears no evil, he knows that goodness and mercy follows him because God is his shepherd, because God has done so much for him. And then finally, the last phrase, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What does David mean by that? He's going to put his address, tabernacle. And if I can build the temple, send all my mail there. That's where I'm living. What does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Even though he wrote it. And one other quick thing on that, just to peg this back to the story of David with Goliath, when he goes out to finally confront him, he says to Goliath, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. He sees him there, not as I fighting against Goliath, but as Lord, which is really in consonance with what he says here.
Right.
I can go through the valley of the shadow of death. But I do see that as prophetic, that last
one. I think that's part of it. I think there's another piece to it as well. Joe, you were going to say something. Certainly. I think there is a piece of the forever piece of it, right? All the days of my life, and then it's going to continue past that. But for Israel, at this point, where did God dwell with them? If you wanted to physically.
Tabernacle,
right? And then it'll be the temple, right? So if they were to go to the Lord, where did they go? They went to the tabernacle. That's where they were supposed to go. And so therefore, I think there's some drawing on that idea. So if you're going to be with God, if you're going to dwell with God, where do you need to be? House of the Lord, right? The tabernacle, those types of things. Did that mean that David really thought, the only way I can be with the Lord is to be at the tabernacle?
Well, no.
No.
Yeah, he prayed when he was in the hands of the Philistines. He prayed to God constantly.
Right. Right.
When you get to the tabernacle.
Yeah.
I think just as the Lord dwelling with his people was symbolic of him.
Yes. I think you said it, because God wasn't physically at the tabernacle. I mean, as I said, physically, but you know, if we were to try to, I mean, he says that's where he would be with his people.
Confined.
He wasn't confined there, and we're not saying that David is. Anytime we'll read it, because just four other psalms, just briefly, Psalm 27:4, Psalm 26:8, Psalm 65:4, Psalm 84:4. Each of those. David, and I'll read 27:4 because it's open right here. One thing I desire of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion, in the second place of his tabernacle. He will hide me, he shall hide me high upon a rock. Definitely figurative speaking, but what he means is, I want to be with God. God is there. I'm going to be with God wherever I'm at, and he's going to protect me. And that's the point that he's saying in the psalm. I will dwell in the house of the Lord. My resolve, and forever, because as definitely as it was spoken of, God will continue forever, and there is always the house of the Lord in one form or another, be it the tabernacle, the temple, the church, right? That is where we will dwell with God. Because there's really only one choice. You don't get to choose where you're going to dwell with God. God has said, dwell with me in my house. And that's where we have to go. Any other comments? Yes.
So, Clint, I want to just kind of extend this entire conversation and point it back to my cover flows. So I find it very interesting and appropriate that is placed right there in this section, because it's right after overflowing cup, gratefulness, appreciation, and thankfulness for what Jesus has done for us. No matter
No, absolutely. And to build on that, I will. I'm sure Ethan will bring it out. But as we go into the further study with David, and we already spoke of it, think of the number of times as you'll look at a psalm and the situation that David's in. He's not in peace in this world. He is not in a place of, you know, comfort. But yet, and it'll bear it out in some of the psalms, really, you know, troubled and things like that. But yet, most of the time, it's always, but you are my refuge, and I praise you, right? And we need to remember that. So we'll see that many times with the psalms. Yeah, right?
Or Saul.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, physically, he's not living in the best places, and he's under stress, and yet he gives to God for his refuge.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Ethan's like, if you get to 1 Samuel 17, then go ahead and jump into that, but he knew better. Anyway, I appreciate it. So next week, you'll pick up in 1 Samuel 17, which is David and Goliath, which is always a great story, right? A great record of faith in God. Thanks, everyone.